Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Paris. I'm coming to you live from the home studio today, the basement of the Vinyl Preacher Productions Tiny Piano Club LLC, aka the Hugo the Hornet hive.
The hive.
Why is it called that? They did used to call the old Charlotte Coliseum the Hive. The Hive is alive. That's what the t-shirts great. Would say. It was pretty fantastic.
It's great.
They used to have. Alive. I don't know. They don't have them anymore because everything is like an LED board. Mm. But in the 90s, you didn't have video boards, right? So along the edge of the upper deck, you had permanent electronic signs, right? Like, so you're like the Bud Light sign was permanent, right? And I've actually noticed this. I've been watching. I've got a VPN installed on my my Chromecast now, and it allows me to watch Colorado Avalanche games because they're on ESPN Plus. If you get around the blackout, and I can do that. Can't the Nuggies not on ESPN Plus? But we'll figure out something there. But I've noticed that on TV you don't see the ads on the boards anymore. Like the real life ones, they're like green screening ish, it right and changing that, and they're live kind of like a soccer board. And when they cut to a different angle, you see right like I was watching them play in Calgary, and it's a bunch like Tim Hortons, like a bunch of stuff right that right. you wouldn't that Tim Hortons. I don't care about right. And so instead, they're able. I guess they've got some sort of deal. They project, Pepsi, Baller, like whatever, like local ads onto onto the boards and the ice, which is interesting. So things have changed. The main thing, though, Matt, is that the Charlotte Coliseum, we took great pride in the only thing we had the ability to take pride in, Matt, and that is that the Hornets sold out every game for 5 years, the first 5 years.
Really?
We were the back-to-back-to-back-to-back attendance champions of the NBA because the Coliseum was very – it was the largest arena in the NBA except for – when the Pistons were building the Palace at Auburn Hills, they played in the Silver Dome for a season, and they got us that year. It felt like cheating a little bit to some of us.
Yeah.
But so a part of having being attendance champions is making noise, right, Matt? And they had like the noise-o-meter was permanently installed in a couple locations around the bottom of the upper deck, right? And the louder you got, the more Hugos. There were all these Hugos like into the last one, right? And perhaps only in the past 2 years have I considered the possibility that that wasn't a scientific instrument and that there was just somebody pushing the button. So it was always so exciting to try to get that biggest Hugo lit up because you're being loud.
Yeah.
But then likewise, so disappointing when you go to like the circus or whatever, they didn't use the Hugo meter. They didn't have it turned on, you know? And so that was always disappointing, you know?
That is disappointing.
Because you're like, that's the coolest part of this whole arena. But it did not make the move with it to the new hive, whatever they call it now, the Time Warner Cable Arena in downtown. Not as big, no longer attendance champions. Bobcats, not attendance champions.
Oh, such a bummer. Is that where they played, where the Bobcats played?
The Boo Boo Cats did play their inaugural season, at least. They spent a season or two in the Coliseum, which was way out, like almost in South Carolina. I was at the first Bobcats game. I drove up from college to go to that. Yeah, they played the Wizards, I believe. I think Michael Jordan was still playing for them. It was weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Who had not yet bought the Bobcats, named, of course, after their owner at the time, Bob Johnson.
It's insane. It's terrible.
Hard to believe the other business decisions he made did not work out.
Wow.
You found BET. Wow. I think you're Midas, you know?
Yeah. Right, yeah, too close to the sun. Yep. Wow. I don't think it's a good idea for me to go down this Charlotte Hornets Wikipedia page deep dive while recording a podcast. You might enjoy it, but oh, it looks like it's the Spectrum Center. That's a shorter name. Wow.
I have Spectrum. I guess Time Warner turned into Spectrum. It's fine.
Michael Jordan still owns
downtown,
the team, huh?
Which is fun. He does.
He does. They have one good? Retired number. That doesn't
Bobby
make sense.
Phils? Is that who it is?
Yeah, that's it. They haven't retired all those 90s players.
Oh, well, here's the issue, Matt. Here's the issue. Well, so Bobby Phils' number's retired because Bobby Phils died as a player in a car accident. The issue is you got Grandmama, you got Larry Johnson.
Yeah.
He only played like 3 seasons in Charlotte.
Still, they were iconic seasons.
They were iconic seasons. Same things with Alonzo Mourning, right? Like, I think they're all in their initial contract. Like, you want to make the case for retiring a number, you're retiring number one for Muggs, right? Like, that's number one
longer.
On the list. He played forever. He's ambassador for basketball and humanity these days. And he was really pretty good. Like, my dad likes to throw cold water on my hot take, which is that Muggsy was really good. And I may have to take... Given, like, I was never old enough to be able to watch Muggsy play with any level of, like critical thought. But you go to basketballreference.com, which I imagine most preachers do. You start your week, you look at the text, then
right.
You go to basketballreference.com just to look up stats from the 90s.
Exactly.
Season after season, he's averaging 10-plus assists a game, which is – those are big numbers.
Yeah.
My dad's rebuttal is he couldn't defend anyone. Like, the the being 5'3 was a really good story and, like, made him pretty crafty on offense. But you could never play him at the end of a game. He's 5'3". Like, six-footers are flat-foot shooting over him, right? Like –
Yeah. That's pretty.
You're going offense for defense.
True.
Second half with Muggsy. Yeah.
Good point.
And
have
about
they done? My brother sent me the other day a link to someone had taken a video of the Phoenix Suns did like a reunion night for their 92-93 Western Conference champions team, and so like they brought out Dan Marley and Kevin Johnson and Charles Barkley and Tom Chambers, I believe, and
Rexy? Sexy Rexy?
Sabalos?
Cedric Ceballos?
And said it was incredible to see them all come out. That's pretty great. They're all much older now. Have they done that? Has Charlotte done that with their iconic 3-year
when they made
run?
The announcement, right? You know me, Matt. I love a good grudge, and I don't like burying hatchets. You got to hold on to that for as long as you can. And one of my grudges has forever been that the NBA franchise plying its trade in New Orleans is the worst thing in the world because they took my Hornets away from me, right? In 2002.
Yeah.
And I was there. I think I may have been there for the last game. Like when I was in high school and I went with friends in high school. Nobody was going. Like, it was the playoffs. We had a pretty good team. Baron Davis, Jamal Mashburn. But then, you know, they'd already announced they were leaving. So it was weird. So they stole them. But I have had to bury the hatchet with New Orleans because they did the most incredible. They did the dumbest thing first. They did the NBA thing. I think hurt people, Matt. You know, we know that. As pastors. And the existence of the Utah Jazz, I think, motivated New Orleans to keep the name and be the Hornets. Right? Like, when we get a sports star, when the kingdom of God comes, the Jazz name will go back to New Orleans where it makes sense versus Utah, the least jazzy place on earth. So I was always so fussy that not only did they steal the team, because then we got the Bobcats like 2 years later. It was a whole... There was a whole thing, and there's a longer version of the story, but like the reason there's never been great reunion stuff is like there's a reason they moved. George Shin, who was the owner, the original owner of the Hornets, and forced the move and stuff. Number one, wasn't rich enough to own an NBA team, it turned out. and then was got embroiled in all these like scandals and stuff and like development things in the city. Like he wanted the new arena and this, and he wanted the city. It was back when, you know, even more than now, like you have to buy, you have to, the city has to build us a new arena or whatever. Like we're not going to pay for it. They were not going to pay for George Shen to get a new arena. They were okay with building the arena, but just not for him. So we sat out for 2 years and then they gave us the expansion franchise to the Bobcats that they built what's now Spectrum Center for. And they had to be the Bobcats because New Orleans was still the freaking Hornets. but then they became the Pelicans and they released the rights to the Hornets history and name and logo and it all came back. So we couldn't, number one, like retired numbers and stuff, because the retired numbers all went, like Bobby Phil's number.
Right.
Most importantly, the attendance champion banners, which hung proudly in the Coliseum. I can only assume we're in New Orleans. They just ship them back. So when they finally, so like the first thing that happened is they announced that they were going to become the Pelicans. So everybody's like, oh my God, it's going to happen. So when they have the actual like release and the new logo is like modified, like it's a refresh and stuff, right? They had a big like kind of old school night. I'd have to look it up, but it was a little more on the B list, like folks. So like Del Curry and Muggsy were there. Like that, the Del and Muggsy are the feel good guys. The issue is Larry Johnson and Lonzo Mourning didn't stay with the Hornets because they hated each other. And there was just a lot of, like, you're not going to get them in the same room together.
Wow.
And then they both go on to pretty iconic careers with other franchises. You know, Alonzo wins a title in Miami, plays there forever, player coach thing. And, you know, asking you about LJ and outside of the Grandma Ma commercial, like you don't remember any actual, like that time in a basketball game with the Hornets when he did anything, right? Like you remember that late 90s. Against Alonzo, where they hated each other, a part of the Heat Miami, the Heat Knicks rivalry, where LJ's doing insane things and doing his crazy, like, L giant L thing as he's running backwards down the floor. And they're fighting each other.
What was it in Space Jam?
I think he was, him and Muggsy. I think were in Space
Jam. Muggsy, you had two Hornets in Space Jam. I mean, that was just wow.
Cultural phenomenon. Like,
cultural phenomenon.
There should be a 30 for 30 on how you could screw that up, right? Like
you could screw that
up. In 1989, there was a parade, Matt. They threw a ticker tape parade for the Hornets, who won 20 games.
I'm just stuck on
that. People everywhere for the parade. And then in 10 years, they're leaving. It's wild. Space Jam.
I'm just stuck on, like, we got to save... We gotta save the Looney Tunes, and you only get five players on the entire globe, and two of those five come from the Charlotte Hornets. That's amazing.
One of them is an incredible defensive liability. Let's hope that the aliens are very short. Turned out not short.
Not short. But no.
Michael could make up for other people's defensive shortcomings, I think.
Wow.
Oh, and I think that was part of the problem is that LJ was such a big deal. I mean, oh gosh, Matt, if we could get the lottery luck now that we had back then, which we have a bit of, right? Your neighbor, LaMelo Ball, is a great player. He's playing for the Hornets. He's good. I'm worried about how long we're going to be able to keep him. And there are a lot of injuries and we suck right now. And we've had some interesting things happen this year. Maybe we'll get some lottery luck. We've had horrific lottery luck as the resurrected Hornets, like Adam Morrison. In that Chris Paul Deron Williams draft, we had Ray Felton and Sean Mays. We drafted Michael Kidd Gilchrist, who couldn't shoot right when the NBA moved to, like, if you can't shoot a three, there's no place for you in the game. And we had a number two pick who literally couldn't hit a field, like anything outside of the paint. But we hit it. Right, we didn't get Shaq. Shaq would have been great. Alonzo was the second pick after Shaq. But LJ comes out huge, commercially successful. He becomes the most highest paid player in the NBA. He gets an $84 million contract. And then Alonzo comes, and it doesn't work. LJ, I think, is very jealous of Alonso. He starts to hurt his back. He has back issues, like, and so he really, people say he was amazing before the back. I mean, he was still like great, you know, important NBA player with the back injury mix, but
yeah, I said we were going to do this, but here we are.
Yeah, we're about 15 minutes into.
I had forgotten. So after the 1995 Johnson Morning era, then we're into the Glenn Rice era. And I'd forgotten that during this period, y'all actually drafted MVP Kobe Bryant. drafted Kobe Bryant?
Well, I'm aware. And we got even value for him. We got Vlade Divac for him straight up.
Yeah.
Bob Bass, I think, was the general manager at the time. You make him play. He says he's going to sit out. Sit out, Kobe.
Yeah.
Sit out.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my second thought. To be fair, Kobe was probably a heat sticking missile that was not going to play anywhere. But
oh, he Los told Angeles him he would not play for the Charlotte Hornets. But I still think you gamble and hardball it and just say.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, Vlade, that's unfair to Vlade, I bet, right? To have to be compared to Kobe because he wasn't Kobe. But he was a very good basketball player. And was a part of those, a core part of those teams that made runs to lose in the second round over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which
with Ben Exel and
we probably was the last time we won a playoff series was with Vlade. So
wow. Really?
The resurrected Hornets have not won a playoff series. I don't know. Vlade may have been done already. That last year they didn't win. They lost to the Bucks in the second round.
Even with Michael Jordan as their owner, huh? Has it worked out for him?
Not yet, Matt. We're going to get this new Euro freak guy. Dear listeners, we don't have, you're not going to believe it if you've followed us for 6 years now. We don't have great graphic design skills per se, right? If you can't insta alpha it, it's not really for us. Mm-hmm. I would pay at least $100 if one of our listeners created a graphic for the Vinyl Preacher, vaguely of Matt and I in an NBA Jam kind of 8-bit format with the two players. Right?
It's going to be some AI that does that.
Yes. Even if there's an AI that does it, if you do it and it's good enough, I'll pay you $100. So.
Wow. That's, Yep. That would be pretty fantastic. Wow. Well, we've officially spent 18 minutes on this topic, but no regrets. I have no regrets.
Season after Epiphany is when preachers want to know, hey, what happened in the 90s in Charlotte with basketball?
I mean, the 90s are having a moment. You got that 90s show on Netflix.
Have you watched
I have not. But I did. I recently went to a Milwaukee Bucks game, and it was 90s night. It was 90s night, and they were running with it. It was pretty great stuff. I'd forgotten who was on the Bucks in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Glenn Mad Dog Robinson.
Yeah. Good stuff. Wow.
Ray Allen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know. Right.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus, if you will. He got game.
Jesus Shuttlesworth.
Shuttlesworth.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
My Chicago Bulls have 90s nights all the time, I think, because that's pretty much all we got. But it's okay. Hold on to it. It's a pretty great run. It's all we got.
So sad. So sad. What's his face was just like, yeah, we don't need Michael anymore. No, thank you. Reinsdorf's like, if I have to choose between, what was the GM? Who was
Jerry Krause.
Krause. If I had to choose between Krause and Jordan, Krause. I'm going to Krause. Look what he did. He got Jordan.
No, I remember. I remember.
All good things come to an end, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of us, good things, the highlights are just getting two players into Space Jam. Yeah. Hey. Do the Bulls have 6 rings from the 90s? Yeah. But how many players were in Space Jam?
Just one.
Hang the banner. Hang the Space Jam banner, Hornets. That's what we're saying.
That's true. That should be a banner in every arena.
I think churches, to pivot here, Matt, would do well if they hung more banners. Right? When, you know, sometimes they're like at the Episcopal Church where I hang out and do our partner church, they have oil paintings of former like rectors of the parish, which is nice.
Oil paintings. Wow.
But what if there were banners hanging in the sanctuary? For some of them. Like, not all of them, though, right? Just the retired. Mm-hmm.
For the pastor?
Yeah.
For the retired pastor.
But not all of them.
Yeah.
Your church has got these walls of fame and stuff. But Baseball Hall of Fame just did their voting this week.
As long as you get a pulley system so you can come back for one Sunday to raise your banner, that'd be pretty fantastic.
It's sad for Lutheran bishops. We can't do that because they all get elected and stuff in crappy hotel ballrooms where you can't hang banners permanently.
Right.
So bishops ineligible for the Church Hall of Fame. They just put every person who serves a church, you know, in the Wall of Fame normally.
Right.
I think the, you know, I think you got it on the spectrum between Baseball Hall of Fame, where it's impossible to get in, and Church Pastor Hall of Fame, where everybody gets it. I think there should be a balance somewhere in the middle.
Some kind of balance. Yeah. I'm really grateful. I'm on the wall of my internship congregation because they not only have their pastors, but then underneath their pastors smaller photo frames, but still on the wall, their interns for the like 11 years that they had interns. And so we go back to visit, and there's Chris and I on the wall, St. John United Lutheran Church in Seattle. Pretty great.
Wow. Those sound a little bit like attendance championships.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Just, you know, having heard from people with experience supervising interns, they probably don't all belong in the Hall of Fame. Given my experience as an intern, wasn't always, I did not make the Hall of Fame at whatever that church was in Evanston.
St. Paul's. Oh my gosh.
Rachel Wind and I did not make the Hall of Fame then. For good reason.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's time for the text.
It's time for Hall of Fame text.
Oh, I don't know what Sunday this is. It looks like my calendar says 5 Epiphany. But so I guess it's fifth Sunday after the Epiphany. I guess that's what that means. But it also feels like it's the second Sunday of the Sermon on the Mount, which should just be its own season. So that's where
there is a lot of Sermon on the Mount here.
Also, it's February 5th, first Sunday of the Black History Month, which, frankly, in my church and in a lot of churches, is its own liturgical season. We're going to change all the paraments, all that stuff for Black History Month. So also a thing.
What, how do you change the paraments? What do they look like?
Kente cloth. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep. So for this first Sunday, Black History Month, fifth Sunday after the Epiphany, second Sunday of Sermon on the Mount series, our first section is Isaiah. It was a surprising choice to me when I read it, but now I see it fits. It works. Isaiah 58. So? We also get it in, what is it? Is it Ash Wednesday? I think it's an Ash Wednesday text as well.
Yeah.
It kicks off Lent.
Yeah, you read it and I'll make sure.
Isaiah 58, 1 to 9a. Don't keep reading to B. 9a.
Don't you dare.
Shout, shout out. Do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Announce to my people their rebellion, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet day after day they seek me and delight to know my ways, as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Why do we fast, but you do not see? I humble ourselves, but you do not notice. Look, you serve your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with a wicked fist. Such fasting as you do today will not make your voice heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose? A day to humble oneself? Is it to bow down the head like a bulrush and to lie in sackcloth and ashes? Will you call this a fast? Day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them and not to hide yourself from your own kin? Then your light shall break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up quickly. Your vindicator shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry for help, and he will say, "Here I am." Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God for a good one.
It is a good one.
For a good one. I looked up, you're right, Matt. It's the alternative to the Joel for Ash Wednesday. But I looked up a bull rush. You know what a bull rush is?
No. No.
It's like an aquatic reed with like seed pods at the top of it. And so it bends over. I think that's the, when the seed pods get heavy, they bend over. And so that's the bowing down that it's referenced to.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It makes me think of, I think it's like the first, it's one of the first chapters in The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn is Moses and the Bull Rushers. Or maybe he talks about Moses and the Bull Rushers. He totally misunderstands what bull rushes are. So I'm glad you've cleared it up for us.
For you and Huck Finn, I hope to serve. such good stuff. Like, this is just good, Isaiah. Like, Isaiah at his best, you know, should go in the Hall of Fame, right? Like I will criticize.
Put another banner. Raise it up on a pulley.
Here's what we do. Bible pyramid, right? Like, can we just move the books?
Like the Bill Simmons pyramid.
Like the Bill Simmons basketball pyramid of greatness.
The book of, yeah. It's great.
The book of the Bible.
That's what we're going to do.
Got to go through all of them. I'm putting at least this part of Isaiah into the Hall of Fame. you know, because I'll criticize Paul and or John for just like, for giving you word salad without much here. Just quick turns of phrase that are so fantastic, right? Like, like you got me with the day after day, they seek me and delight to know my ways as if they were a nation that practiced righteousness, right? Like that's great. Good. That's quick, good. I mean, that says a lot, right? And then, you know, your light shall break forth like the dawn and your healing shall spring up quick. Like that's, what else do you need? Like it makes the preacher's job easy when you got such good, quick, accessible, like, and it's, you hear it and you know what it's saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really good. I, when I read this text, I cannot help but hear, like, I feel like the first time I, you know, like there's first times you hear that. And then there's like the first time you really hear the text. And I think the first time I really heard this text was, at LSTC in the soon to be, foreclosed on chapel on Ash Wednesday, would have either been 2007 or 2008. Angela Cobb read it in chapel, just gave such life to it. Like I still remember it. I mean, really brought that, just brought the spirit to it. So I still hear that and just the power of these words. Yeah. From what you call this a fast. It's not this the fast that I choose. Just really good stuff. And still, I think calls us back just this idea that worship when you are oppressing your workers is not true. Which is just like, it's right there. So I'm glad it's one of these texts that is assigned every year. It's an alternate for Ash Wednesday, but you could use that every year if you want to. And then even shows up here in the regular old lectionary. So it is definitely one to read over and over, and should be on the pyramid.
Do you have a worship committee, Matt?
Do I have a worship committee? I have I have a music team that I consult with when we are planning worship. So yeah.
Well, I think when you sit down with whatever group it is as a pastor who plans worship, you should really take this Isaiah text to heart and start with, as we're planning worship, step number one, can we make sure that nobody here is oppressing their workers?
Yep.
That's step number one on the road to good worship.
Yeah.
According to Isaiah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that anybody cares about this, but We're currently in the midst of annual meeting season.
Good news, Matt.
Looking at our,
we did 18 minutes on the 90s Hornets.
and we're looking at our budget, and we got the government lease there their cost of living adjustment this year. And we're like, you know, we really should give cost of living adjustments to our, to all of our staff. But it's a pretty big number. It requires this commitment. We've got to like actually do this thing. And so to have this conversation, like if we don't do that, I mean, I don't know if it rises to the level of oppressing your workers, but it should give you pause. Like, are you going to worship, but be paying people, less than what they're worth? You know, like how do we take this seriously in a church context?
Yeah. I like it, Matt. Worship is not isolated.
What else? Oh, you know what? It does cut off sooner. Well, I guess we're ending it at 9A. Because I was like, I think it gets to this watered garden.
I swear to God, man, if you read 9B.
All this stuff. But this is good. It's good enough. And we get light shall break forth like the dawn, which I think is going to tie into Matthew. And maybe the rest of these words from Isaiah can fill out what Jesus is talking about.
It actually, you are allowed to go 9B to 12. It is an optional add-on. So I'm not going to get that upset.
If you need some filler, if you feel like your worship service is too short, and you just need to
too short.
You need to pad it by putting some extra verses in there. That's what you do.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real problem as a worship leader. Typically, you're like, man, this thing is way too tight. We got to fluff it up a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That used to be a problem for me. Or not a problem. A thing I thought about when writing sermons. Like, oh, this isn't long enough. We got to like, this needs to be a little longer. Right? I have not had that thought in a very long time.
Yeah.
Well, this is really long, but it's probably pretty good this way, right? I'll just go with it. Yep. Oh, Matt, we're working our way through Sermon on the Mount. I've been doing a lot of work on the ones that's coming next week. We'll hopefully get one of our student preachers on the podcast to talk about their experience preparing to preach on adultery, divorce, and murder. So that's what college students are equipped to go talk to people about. But before we get there, we're going to read the part just before it. Jesus said, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It is no good for anything, but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under the bushel basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have not come not to abolish, but to fulfill. For truly, I tell you, until heaven and earth pass away, not one letter, not one stroke of a letter, not one iota will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Therefore, whoever breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven, but whoever does them and teaches them will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." The gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Woo! I've got some evergreen notes to make, Matt. Number one, right, is according to Word by Molina, because the saltiness thing doesn't always make sense and stuff, right? According to Word by Molina, there was a salt plate used in cooking ovens at the time that was an igniter. Huh. And so you could use up the salt plate and have to like refresh it or get a new one. And it would no longer be able to get the fire started, right? So in connection to like light, flame, that sort of thing here, it leads into it. It implies that we could be talking about fire starting. Right. Otherwise, salt of the earth, like, what is that? I don't know. You are the fire starters, the igniters of this thing, this kingdom of God that Jesus has brought into the world. So there's my interesting Robert Molina note. The thing I know that's coming is that Jesus is about to lift up a couple commandments, basically, right? Thou shalt not kill, murder, kill, adultery. And then he like raises them to the next level. Not even the next level. He takes it, like he turns it up to 11, where he's like, not only do I say to you, don't kill, but be reconciled to everyone you've ever met. Right. Like Jimmy Carter it on adultery, you know, which can be tricky. I really enjoyed, Matt, I don't know if you saw it this week, Twitter joke that went around, because, you know, infamously Jimmy Carter said that he had committed adultery in his heart, quoting this part of the Sermon on the Mount. And people made fun of him for that. Somebody on Twitter said that Jimmy Carter just announced that he found classified documents in his heart. He's going to have a very somber press conference to announce that he has classified documents in his heart. So like Jesus is like, here's where the bar is, but it's actually higher. And so it sounds foreboding. Unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is about to say it's actually not that hard because the Pharisees and scribes aren't that good at this. So because they're just like, you know, as I have done with our preaching group when we meet, I take after we read it, I just do a quick check in to see who committed murder today. And so far, nobody's committed murder. So not that hard. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, we read this in Bible study last night. Folks thought the last line was a little harsh, felt a little harsh, mm-hmm. But, yeah, Jesus is not backing down. He's taking it seriously. I feel like it's also helpful to remember, like, for some reason, I have this image, like Sermon on the Mount. I always like picture Jesus with a bullhorn, like just announcing these dictates to everyone. But really, like he's speaking to his disciples here. Like he's gone up this mountain.
Yeah,
it's there not are a big crowds crowd. Gathered, but like he's speaking like to his disciples, and so you know, it's almost like yeah, you're going to be held to a high standard because all eyes on you. You know, like so there's something to that too. We also talked about salt. In our Bible study, some folks said, I can't eat salt. It's really bad for you. You can't have too much salt. And then we started having a debate about what is the best seasoning. Some folks liked Lari's, some folks wanted the Creole seasoning. We had a good debate about what is the best kind of seasoning that you can have, which would not be a terrible sermon starter. Let me tell you, people are probably into that. So
gets the people have going. Fun. Middle-aged white people problem. Fun fact, the vinyl spouse and I both got each other salt and pepper devices for Christmas.
There you go. There's your sermon starter, Zach.
And we were both excited about it.
That's great. That's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Salt, so important to cooking, man. Like that's been a... As I've become a semi-professional food service worker and run a nonprofit restaurant, I've learned salt that makes it like it pulls all the juices out. It's not just the taste, right? It's why you throw the handful of salt on when you're just getting your onions going and stuff. Is that it pulls all that good stuff out? So,
yeah.
So maybe that's the way to go. You know, you don't have to like be perfect with your Robon Molina stuff every week either. You're a preacher. You have enough creative license to do what you need. Pulls the good stuff out of you.
I suppose. So you got salt of the earth, you got light of the world, and you got fun stuff about the law. So plenty to work with, dear preachers.
Plenty of good stuff.
Well, what are we listening to this Sunday?
Matt, I think there's no better way to start this off. There's a line that really speaks to me. You can't laugh at the beginning to give the bit away, Matt. This Isaiah speaks to me. I'm thinking about getting it tattooed on me. Is not the fast that I choose to loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke. So I'm putting the thong song on by Sisqó. Which is so hard to imagine. There's such a moment in time. Could you imagine such a song? I mean, maybe.
I cannot.
WAP came out. I don't know. Like lots of crazy things happen. So I'm putting that on there. Then I've put it on the playlist a couple of times, but it's such a good song. And it makes me think about, it's the first song I think about when I think about salt. And so I'm putting, I was salt, you were the sea, which... You can find the tabulature for on ultimate-guitar.com that I uploaded. You're welcome, Joel.
That's right.
And Covenant. And finally, Matt, got to change it up. You know me. I'm a spiritual resident of Laurel Canyon. And this was a sad week. in Laurel Canyon. David Crosby died. David Crosby, who, gosh, he was in so, like, he was so important and in so many places at the right time, and, you know, an embodiment of all the full lore, myth, legend that was Laurel Canyon, of being in the Byrds, getting kicked out of the Byrds. What a fun, interesting life he led. Did you know he was in Backdraft, the film?
What? No.
In 1991, he has a cameo in Backdraft. In the opening montage, if you watch it, he's in the credits. He's a 70s hippie who runs up to the, Dennis Quaid or whoever it is. He's the firefighter and is like, all my stuff's up there. You need to help me. And that's it. That's all you get for David Crosby. His first, it was his first acting role.
Wow.
Did incredible work all over the place, really. And the main thing to think about with David Crosby is just a natural, like, strangely enough, musically, team player. Like, his best stuff was always with other people, and perhaps his superpower was his ability to fit in musically with other folks, even if he couldn't fit in socially. So whether that's producing for like Joni Mitchell, with whom he was really close, and other folks, but he gets into super group, Crosby, Stills, Nash, and sometimes Young. Gosh, there's a couple of good ones I want you to check out, Matt. He's on the 1999 Graham Parsons tribute album, accompanying, Lucinda Williams on a cover of Return of the Grievous Angel, which is beautiful. There's a YouTube video of him just this past year coming out with Jason Isbell in the 400 unit, and they cover Ohio. And he's great, especially on the end, just screaming why, which again, I don't know. I'm a Laurel Canyon person. It gets me every time listening to Ohio. just that drumbeat repetition of Poor Dad in Ohio. But for the playlist, in memory of David Crosby, I'm going to put A Long Time Gone on there, which is on that same, what is it? Is it Deja Vu? Is that what the album's called? The kind of seminal Crosby, Stills, and Nash song. But written by David right after Robert Kennedy dies, and is just full of that, like, disillusionment with the promise of the 60s and stuff, right? And that it feels like the kingdom of God is a long time gone, I think, for Crosby and for CSN there. And I think there's a part of that in the text, because it's not a complete song of mourning. It's a call to action as well, the same way these texts are. So check it out. Spent a lot of Crosby this week, and I'll see you guys at the general store up there in the canyon.
I was just thinking that when you come off for Coachella, maybe we're gonna have to do like a little field trip to Laurel Canyon.
Oh my gosh,
that's such a Laurel Canyon kick. Move to go find the general store. I think I've driven past it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But, never been there. Never been inside. So maybe that's first time for everything. Maybe that's,
put it on your California bucket
Coachella
list.
Pilgrimage. That's right. Yeah, I should come up with a California bucket list with a complicated point system. That'd probably be good for me.
It's something to do.
It's something to do. Oh, wow. What have I got? Well, it's an oldie but a goodie, This Little Light of Mine. There's a million different versions of it, but the version that I have been on a kick on lately for the last year or so is by the Staple Singers. And they've got a version from the 60s that is just, it's got a little, it moves in a different way. I feel like it's just got such a vibe to it that is different from, you know, the standard, the kind of Sunday school way that I think, many of us are used to hearing it. But even the gospel church version, which is also solid, this even is different from that. It's got like a different vibe. So look it up, the Staple Singers, This Little Light of Mine. And then continuing through my Coachella explorations. Oh, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. I just put it on shuffle, like the giant playlist. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of sifting through the electronica, right? The drum bass, you sift through. There's a couple lo-fi beats where I'm like, yeah, okay, maybe if I'm looking for this vibe, this is not bad, but mm-hmm. it's like a lo-fi beats. You're sifting through some of that. And then you find some stuff. And so this is one of the things I found. Twin Flame. It's a little flame reference by, how am I going to pronounce this? K K K-Tronada, featuring Anderson .Paak. It's good. It's good. Twin Flame. And then finally, this one's from probably 20 years ago, but I remember liking it when we lived in Bloomington, Indiana. It's Let Your Light Shine by Keb Mo.
It's Mo good. Keb. Mo Problems. I like it. I've started sourcing artists' recommendations from students. Some of them are excited. The most initial excitement has been around Rosalia, which I think, so there you go. A lot of buzz around Rosalia right now. So
nice.
Chicken teriyaki again. Chicken teriyaki. I did, speaking of the mid-90s, we've done mid-90s. I'll do one more bit on mid-90s because I've spoken around the Coachella playlist as well. And I remember I had like a, it wasn't Rolling Stone, but it was like a Rolling Stone-ish kind of magazine, like Spin maybe, that I bought from Walmart. And it was all about how the Chemical Brothers were the next big thing. And I just assumed they were because the magazine said they were, right? But I had no way of listening to them. So I had no, I still don't know what the Chemical, like I've listened in the past week or so to some Chemical Brothers.
Yeah.
The main thing is remembering that in the late 90s, they were going to be huge.
Yeah.
And believing it, but then it not really ever happening.
Yeah. I vaguely remember the Chemical Brothers too, but vaguely remember, so they must not have been the next big thing. I look forward to diving into that.
Oh, I can't wait.
Well, it's been real.
Real, nostalgic, and vinyl.